All I'm asking for is a return to balance in this state, because we don't have it now. We don't have competitive balance, and jobs are leaving.
When brokers come in with this special software, a bot, it lets them gobble up tickets at an incredible pace, leaving the public with almost no chance to buy a ticket at face value.
Let's see how much money Fox is going to make on the debate without
me. She might ask a mean question, and who knows what could happen. I mean, his hair could stand on end.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It's 5:10 and it is Thursday. It is the 28th day of January 2016, and welcome to the program. We have a lot to talk about today. Mark Harm is here. Mark Harmon is here from sports, business of sports. Dave Ennett is going to join us for a conversation a little bit later on about the ticket prices for the Bears and other sports news that's happening, the business of sports. And then later in the show, we're going to check in with ABC News, our ABC News correspondent in Washington, on the very latest on the Federal Reserve's actions yesterday, or inactions, as it may be, and what may be ahead in the future. But this morning, all eyes are on the markets. The Dow Jones Industrials, as you know, fell 222 points yesterday. That's about 1.4% to 15,944. A large chunk of that loss belonged to Apple and Chicago-based Boeing, which gave a disappointing 2016 outlook and suffered its biggest one-day loss in 14 years. The Standard & Poor's 500 index sank about 20 points, or about 1.1%, to 1882. The slump in tech stocks hammered in the NASDAQ, which lost about 99 points, or 2.2% of its value yesterday. The day ahead features a number of economic reports, most important among them. The Labor Department will report on the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits last week, and the Commerce Department releases its December report on durable goods. Also today, the National Association of Realtors releases its December report on pending home sales, which are seen as a barometer of future purchases, and Freddie Mac reports on this week's average mortgage rates. That's all coming up later today. As we mentioned yesterday, the Federal Reserve decided not to change interest rates. They also said nothing about their decision 6 weeks ago that many have said is causing some of the volatility in world markets this morning. As you may have heard just as we came in this morning, the market futures are higher this morning. The Dow futures are up 59 points. S&P futures are up 10. The price of oil is trading now at about $33, and it is up this morning on world markets. In Asia, mixed situation overnight. The Asian Dow was up just a point. The Nikkei still trading up about 100, down about 123 points. The Hang Seng up about 144 points. China markets were lower this morning. Joining us in the studio this morning to talk about the business of sports is Mark Carman at The Carm on Twitter. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the Opening Bell. We've got the Super Bowl coming up in just about a week or so, and the Bears have put out their ticket prices. We're going to talk about both of them with you, but the ticket prices, I guess, is what everybody's talking about in Chicago today, right?
Yeah, the Bears made an announcement yesterday. President and CEO Ted Phillips talking about the letter that came out to season ticket holders who do get a discount, Steve, on their preseason tickets that they don't actually want, but they're 40% off from last year, which is exciting. The Bears are making that up, though, by putting a 10% increase on all the regular season games, so it actually becomes flat if you do the math on that. Your bill is exactly the same, but they've distributed the money in a different way, which is creative, I would say. And more respectful for what the preseason is worth, but I don't know if you can, you know, do the Bears, should they be raising prices for the regular season off of 6-10 season off of the last 2 years prior to that? It's kind of an argument that many fans would have.
WGN's Dave Ennett is joining the conversation as well. Dave, what do you think? Do you think this is a good deal?
I think it's fair. Yeah. I mean, I do. I think that if you're a Bears season ticket holder and you don't have any kind of an increase, I think when you're 6-10 and you raise the season ticket price, the whole package, by 10%, I think that's different. And I think one of the complaints that I know, I've been a season ticket holder in the past, and I know other people have felt this way, is that you're forced to buy the preseason games, which they've gotten worse over the years. I mean, there used to be, I think, a little more value in them, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. Guys would play a little more in the preseason. Now, by that third preseason game with a fourth preseason game, nobody plays. And if that happens to be one of the home games, one of the two home games, and that happens to be something you're buying, I've always felt that and people walk out of there, if they show up at all, just shaking their heads. Now, those tickets are sold, so even though there are empty seats for those games, the Bears have gotten their money. But I just think that this is at least a way to send a message to the ticket buyer that, yeah, we get it. We understand that you're not seeing the same product on the 18th of August that you're going to see on the 10th of September.
So the discussion will continue after traffic and weather together. But, you know, one of the questions is this sort of setting the stage for perhaps next year when the Bears could raise prices all across the board?
Always building towards that.
Right.
In every sport.
We'll talk about that more coming up after the break. This is the opening bell for Thursday. It's 5:15. Traffic now. Good morning, Mary Vandeville.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Another loss for the Dow Jones Industrial Average Wednesday, largely driven by negative outlooks at Boeing and Apple. The Dow's fell 222 points to 15,944. The S&P 500 dropped 20 points. The Nasdaq was off nearly 100. Apple rival Samsung also has taken an earnings hit, a 40% drop in the final quarter of 2015 compared with the year before. Samsung faces challenges in its core business as sales of smartphones and semiconductors drop off. A naturalized U.S. citizen from China has entered a plea agreement with federal prosecutors, admitting that he participated in a conspiracy to steal seed corn from U.S. companies. The Florida man planned to steal seed from Iowa fields and genetically reproduce it for the Chinese. New ways to say OMG or LOL. After 4 months of testing outside the U.S., Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg says 5 new emoticons will soon be added to his social network. Look for symbols for angry, sad, wow, ha-ha, yay, and love. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 5:20 on this Thursday morning. We're in the discussion of Mark Harmon here, a business of sports. Dave Ennett's along, too. And we were talking before the break about the Bears' ticket prices and whether or not this sets the tone or sets the foundation for an increase. What goes into the decision to make an increase like that? Would it be another good season? Would they have to go more than 6-10?
Well, it's more than that, Steve. There's a lot of data out there now. You got StubHub, you got SeatGeek. All the teams know exactly what fans are paying for their seats, so they can have their season ticket prices. But the real market, the secondary market, they know what that is. Before it was kind of as well, what are they really, you know, what's it really worth? Now it's incredibly clear, so they know that their preseason tickets are worth a whole lot less than they're charging, and that's why you see that drop. And they feel like, hey, the market will support a 10% increase on the regular season. And Bears tickets, I mean, for years, I don't know if you ever had them, Dave, but I mean, mm-hmm. You know, families just don't give them up.
Right. Yeah. And it's a generational thing. I mean, I know I have friends who they've had the season tickets in their family going back to Wrigley Field, and they would never dream of giving those up. So in some cases, they bought the PSLs when they redid Soldier Field and the personal seat licenses, and they've bought the club memberships and all that you have to do to maintain that, but it's something that they value, and obviously these tickets have held their value pretty well over the years. That's the other thing.
If you look at the secondary market, the Bears are third in the NFL at $352 a seat on average. Number one is Seattle. This is coming off of last season, so this year's data is not available yet, but $438. And then the Broncos, who of course are back in the Super Bowl at $378. And the cheapest seat, if you go all the way down, is Kansas City at $125. So the Bears, listen, people are paying the prices, and they're third from the top. So, and I mean, that's more than the New England Patriots.
And that was coming off 5-11.
Right. Yeah.
Is there a breaking point for tickets when you see people stop buying them? And where do you get to the breaking point?
The Cubs are a great example for that. You had 3 years of complete death, and a lot of people gave up their seats, and it was available. But overall, they were able to hold the prices, and now, after one good season, they're raising them. You know, I mean, that was a tough thing to swallow for many Cub fans.
I think it all gets down to ultimately success, and I think fans do want to see their teams win, so that's and have success. I don't know if there's a point, because I think that there's something, if you're going to shell out the money for tickets, especially season tickets in a lot of cases, then you're also paying for the whole experience. It's not just chance to go see your team play.
The person that used to invest, though, in season tickets to try to flip, hey, maybe half their season and go for free or make a little money, those days are over. It just, the value is not there for the season ticket holder anymore. I mean, and it really across the board in any sport. The prices are way too close to exactly what the market bears. And when there's a slight downturn, you know, the season ticket holder is paying more for his seat than what they're actually worth.
And how much do the companies like StubHub and all the other ticket brokers come into play with this? You heard one of the sound bites in our montage of news that's going on about the bots that go in and buy up some of these tickets and jack up the prices to points where people can't afford them. How do they get into the mix here and play with ticket prices?
Well, I mean, I look at StubHub like they're just Vegas. Whatever the price is, I mean, they're getting a cut, right? I mean, they're getting their 15%. Mm-hmm. It's better for them, obviously, if the prices are up, but I mean, I don't know if there's some the biggest thing that I saw about StubHub is that when ticket prices do fly up in a real brief period of time, people can back out of their seats and StubHub will not honor them. So you know they step out of it and put it on the fan.
I think one thing you've seen in recent years is that the leagues have recognized the involvement in the secondary market. They've gotten involved themselves, either partnering with, say, StubHub or setting up their own ticket exchanges, online ticket exchanges. So if you're a season ticket holder and you're not using your tickets, you go to the site and basically there's still a little more money changing hands than just the face value of the ticket.
But it's not something completely outlandish and, you know, three or four times the price of a ticket that you see for
concert. Well, I think people feel better about it, Steve, because I think it's regulated.
Yeah.
And at least they feel like they're dealing with somebody. They sort of have a sense of who's at the other end.
Yeah.
I always wonder when the teams are in bed like they are. Dave, it's a great point by Dave. Do you, on the big games where they know the tickets are worth more, do you actually release them or do they go right to the secondary market? I kind of wonder what goes on behind the scenes. Not that I have any proof, but I do wonder.
Well, sometimes you do have to wonder because, you know, in the concert area, I mean, you see how high some of those prices go. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're $1,000, $2,000 when it was the $50 ticket.
Super Bowl 50, by the way, is the most highest price Super Bowl of all time. $5,461 the average price right now on StubHub because it's being played out in Silicon Valley. A lot of money out there, obviously, so that's part of the reason.
You know, there was a day when the NFL didn't sell out the Super Bowl.
I mean, can you imagine $5,461 a seat?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, used to be face value, whatever it was for a Super Bowl ticket, that's what you paid. And you could get tickets. Now it's become just so big that I think it's priced the average guy out.
All right, the great conversation, Business of Sports, Mark Carman and Dave Ennett. You can follow Mark at The Carm. The Business of Sports on the opening bell. It's 5:26, and now this from ABC.
From ABC News Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, a fix to a problem many people, maybe over 40, have. Are you somebody who needs reading glasses to read your phone or a menu at a restaurant, but you never have the glasses you need? The five pairs you own are never handy? It's such a problem, a group of Silicon Valley inventors came up with a fix, a smartphone case that also holds a pair of ultra-thin reading glasses. They're made by a company called Thin Optics. Darren Lancaster is a co-founder of Thin Optics.
You'll never forget your reading glasses again because they're always with you.
The glasses can be stored in such little space because they don't have traditional ear temples, the arms go behind your ears. Instead, they sit on your nose, but incredibly well through all kinds of design tweaks.
Two credit cards thick, they weigh about a nickel.
The Thin Optics glasses come in iPhone and Galaxy cases for about $40 or a pod that you can stick onto your current case for $25. They can be bought at places like drugstores and online. With Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, ABC News.
Dennis Hastert's attorneys are in court today. We'll have that coming up. The latest news with Vic Vaughn still ahead. It's 5:27.
Patrick Kane, your Chicago Blackhawks.
You know, I almost feel like I might need my Russian passport now to go over there and train with my two line mates. It's been fun playing with Panarin.
How have you guys been communicating? Because I'm at a lot of games, and I don't see the interpreter skating behind him.
He knows more English than he lets on, to be honest with you. I think he just doesn't really want to do the interviews after the game when he scores all those goals.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:37. Welcome back to the program. SunTrust Banks has released the teaser for its first ever Super Bowl ad. It's entitled Hold Your Breath.
Hold your breath. Hold it. Hold it.
Hold it. Dale Buss is a veteran business journalist, a regular contributor to Forbes.com, Brand Channel, The Chief Executive Magazine, and other publications. Based in Detroit, a former Wall Street Journal reporter as well. We'd like to welcome him into the opening bell. Dale, welcome to the program. How are you this morning?
Thanks a lot. I'm great.
Well, you heard the little ticking there. SunTrust, this is the first time they're appearing in a Super Bowl ad. And the ad, I guess, the teaser gives us a sense that maybe this is going to be more about our, instead of selling something, more about our own financial situation, right? Is that what you're getting?
Interestingly, I mean, SunTrust is it's based in Atlanta, but it is a national financial services brand. And there are a lot of first-time advertisers in the Super Bowl this year, and nearly $5 million for 30 seconds. They've got to get it right. So what SunTrust is doing is they're saying hold your breath as a teaser is meant to talk about the problem of financial stress that so many Americans feel. You know, the economy has certainly been up and down, and their idea is to tap into that feelings of financial anxiety that so many people continue to feel, even though the labor market's getting better, you know, wages aren't. And so what they're going to do is kind of an issue-oriented advertisement come Super Bowl Sunday, where they're going to acknowledge and talk about the financial stress that people feel and, of course, try to provide a way out of that, which in their case is going to be kind of an education program online and elsewhere, where they're going to help people figure out things like budgeting and some of the basics that Americans feeling financial stress can maybe turn to alleviate some of that. But, you know, there are all sorts of issues with running an issue-oriented ad, which is kind of one of the interesting things about what SunTrust is doing.
Well, I want to talk to you about that momentarily, but this back to the ad for just a moment. It's going to include something called a mental wealth quiz.
Yeah, SunTrust is going to invite people. They say it's going to be highly interactive. So, you know, every ad these days has a website at the end or whatever, but the SunTrust people are telling me that they're kind of teasing it with the idea that it's going to be very interactive from the opening seconds, and it's going to be inviting people continually in a number of ways to go to their website. Among the helping things they'll find at the website are what they're calling a mental health quiz, where you take this 10-question quiz about things like, you know, do you budget your income, that kind of thing. And based on your answers, it will direct you to content, information, advice on the website to hopefully get you down the path toward relieving some of that financial anxiety. So that's what Hold Your Breath is about. It's kind of like that's how people feel when they feel the kind of anxiety that SunTrust is referring to.
And that sort of brings us to the potential for failure or success here, because most people tune into the Super Bowl to have fun and sort of let go of some of the stressors in their lives. Do you think that this might have the opposite effect on people than they are hoping, SunTrust is hoping?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the whole question about their ad. Issue-oriented advertisements are, you know, are okay. Like, for instance, WeatherTech, a company based right there in Bolingbrook, suburban Chicago, you know, it has running an ad for the third year in a row in the Super Bowl, and they're going to talk about the issue of Made in America manufacturing. Okay. I mean, Dodge, a few years ago, did this ad called The Farmer, where they kind of extolled the American farmer and used an excerpt from a Paul Harvey speech. Those are maybe issue-oriented ads, but they aren't preachy. And I think the concern about the SunTrust ad is, do you really want to interrupt people eating their nacho dip by reminding them that they're really concerned about their finances? You know, they're worried. They're trying to root for one team or another, or they're at a party or whatever, and are they going to want to stop and really pay attention to this ad, which is a downer? A year ago, Nationwide Insurance made a huge mistake by running an ad about safety in the home and how people were kind of leaving things unsafe in the home and ended up in the death of a young child, and the young child was the narrator of the ad. And this ad just got panned by everybody. Nobody wanted to watch it. Everybody hated the whole idea and the execution. And it was really, a big stumble for Nationwide. So that's the kind of thing that SunTrust needs to be concerned about and just wary of, is this the kind of advertisement that you want to pay $5 million bucks for and then have people just kind of turn on it.
Because there are some people who are having the Super Bowl parties who are probably charging all of the supplies to their party onto a credit card that they probably shouldn't have, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. One big source of financial anxiety is consumer debt. But, I mean, the SunTrust people tell me we're going to be optimistic. It'll end up being sunny. But there is an interesting tilt in some of these Super Bowl ads toward, you know, a bit of a preachiness. For instance, Colgate, the toothpaste brand, is going to advertise for the first time in the Super Bowl. They're not going to talk about white teeth or plaque control or anything. They're going to talk about saving water. So that'll be another interesting thing to watch in terms of, wow, you know, let's get really sober here. Somebody just comes out of the bathroom at a Super Bowl party, and they're going to be feeling guilty about, you know, a flush. So.
Yeah, but then on the other side of this, though, Dale, there is the argument from other companies who regularly spend a lot of money on the Super Bowl that their funny ads really don't do a lot for sales. Talk about that part of this equation.
Well, that can be true. I think it all comes down really to execution. I mean, if you talk to Super Bowl, if you talk to the ad people in general, they'll say that the way to get attention in a Super Bowl ad is to use either humor, you know, outrageousness, or celebrities. And we're especially this year going to see a lot of celebrities. And I think it can go either way. I mean, ads that get attention don't have to be funny. They can be serious. The, you know, one of the iconic advertisements of the last 5 years was the one 5 years ago in which Chrysler used Eminem and a gospel choir in this setting in, you know, gritty industrial Detroit to advertise one of their cars. Well, it's praised as one of the best Super Bowl ads of all time, and it was not funny. It was very thoughtful. So I think it can go either way. It comes down to execution. It's got to be well done. It's got to have a device that wakes you up, gets attention. And frankly, in terms of sales, one of the most important things with Super Bowl ads is these days is having a campaign, usually via social media and online, to get attention for the ad ahead of time, and then afterward, you know, to continue to mine that advertisement for attention and buzz and interest going forward. And that's kind of what Super Bowl advertising has gotten down to, is managing the campaign up until game day and then afterwards as well.
We have about 30 seconds left, Dale, but back to the issue involved with this ad. SunTrust is really hitting on something that we're going to need to discuss at some point or another, right? The financial condition of Americans.
Oh, absolutely. For one thing, Americans aren't generally financially literate. You know, they don't understand their finances. They aren't taught as kids necessarily, and a number of brands are trying to go after that problem. But the idea of financial anxiety obviously is very real. And if the economy, you know, especially, I mean, look at the stock market, the swoon that it's taken so far this month. A lot of individual Americans have investments tied up there, their retirements. So, you know, SunTrust really could hit a strong nerve come Super Bowl Sunday. It'll be really interesting to see. I think it's all going to be in the execution. You know, how do they actually do it?
Dale Busso, veteran business journalist, regular contributor to Forbes.com, Brand Channel, Chief Executive Magazine, other publications. Thanks for being with us on the opening bell this morning.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
All right, you can follow Dale at Dale D. Buss on Twitter. This is the opening bell. We'll be back to talk more about what the Federal Reserve did or did not do yesterday. That's after traffic. Here's Mary Vandeville.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:49. Welcome back to the program. Dow futures are higher this morning, just a little, though, by 21 points. S&P futures also higher. Crude oil is flat now after trading at about $33 a barrel. We expect the price of oil to be fluctuating all day today. We're also keeping a close eye on the Asian markets this morning. The Hang Seng up 144, but most of the other indices are lower. Again, we're expecting a open on Wall Street later today that'll be a little higher. At least right now, the Dow futures pointing upwards. Now for a look at some of the commodity prices, here's Orion Samuelson.
Steve, the cattlemen have come to San Diego. We have about 7,000 cattlemen and cattle ladies here in San Diego for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association Convention. Major topics being discussed today as policy will get set on Saturday. Cattlemen very concerned about the EPA ruling on the definition of WOTUS, Waters of the United States. Very hot topic at this convention because cattlemen say it violates their personal property rights. The other issue that is of concern has to do with exports of American beef products and the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, now approved by the companies involved, but now it must be going back to those countries for their Congress or Parliament to approve or disapprove. The incoming president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Tracy Bruner of Kansas, said this is absolutely critical to the cattle industry in the United States to get the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership approved quickly so that we can increase beef exports to the Asian countries in particular. We'll see what happens today as we continue this convention that goes through Saturday. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. It's 5:51 now. Yesterday, the Federal Reserve Market Committee had their wrapped up their monthly meeting, and they decided not to raise rates again yesterday. That was expected. But what is unexpected is what's going to happen the rest of the year. ABC News correspondent Megan Hughes from Washington is on the opening bell this morning. Megan, I guess the big question is there was nothing that the Federal Reserve did, but it did move the markets. What can we expect the rest of the year? What's happening with the Federal Reserve?
Well, that's a very good question, and I have to say that this statement left a lot of questions unanswered. It is significant. This was the first meeting of the new year, the first statement of the new year, first since they had their historic interest rate hike, the first interest rate hike in 10 years, and the first since we've seen all this turmoil in the markets in January. So there was a lot of expectation that the Federal Reserve was really going to give investors some indication of their thinking and what we were going to see going forward with these interest rates hikes. They did not move the interest rates, which was expected. There were no big policy announcements today, but they also didn't say very much about where rate hikes were going to be going forward. What's it going to look like in March? They used some of the same language that they used in the last meeting, that these rate hikes are going to be gradual. And as far as all of the market turmoil, they said that they're closely monitoring global economic and financial developments and assessing their implications for the labor market and inflation. They still sounded very positive on the labor market, and they do have significant concerns about inflation. They did tweak some of the language there, and that has a lot to do with oil prices.
But still, there seems to be an indication that they're going to raise rates again this year.
Absolutely. The expectation and the question that a lot of investors have is how many times? So originally the Federal Reserve members had indicated that it would likely be four times. Now because of the market turmoil that we've seen, a lot of investors are expecting that that's going to be downgraded, that it's going to be two times or three times. But again, today's statement really didn't give a lot of answers. And this was one of the meetings where Chairman Yellen did not have a press conference afterwards. So there was no opportunity to ask questions or get any sort of readout on that.
And that's the other part of this is, you know, it's sort of like a small baby that needs to be coddled a lot, the economy and investors in general. Don't you think that this would have helped the markets a little if they would have acknowledged some of this?
I think certainty would help, and I think that Chairman Yellen has tried to increase transparency in part out of concern of what the markets are going to do. But I think at the same time, it's a tricky balance because I do think, as they say in their statement, that they're closely monitoring. I think the way the statement's worded and all of the members were on board, it gives them a lot of leeway going into March, maybe not knowing what's going to happen and what the outlook is going to be. Because, you know, these interest rate hikes have been in the works for a long time. You remember in December, a lot of the talk was, this is an indication that we are out of the recovery, that we are back on our feet. The labor market has improved dramatically. And so to scale that back or walk that back or slow that down, it is going to indicate some real concern on the part of the Federal Reserve members.
And perhaps maybe not having a news conference would be an opportunity for the Fed chairman not to put her foot in her mouth or say something that might actually be scary to the market.
Right, and so it could have worked to her benefit, but it's all a planned thing. So it's every other meeting she has a news conference. So there was no expectation that there would be a policy change at this meeting, and there was no expectation that she would have a news conference.
ABC News correspondent Megan Hughes with us from Washington. Again, the Labor Department today will report on last week's jobless claims. Freddie Mac releases the weekly mortgage rates, and the National Association of Realtors issues its pending home sales. All will have impact on the markets today. Dow futures right now are higher. Just a reminder, we want you to join us March 10th at the Economist Innovation Forum 2016, held at the Four Seasons Hotel, with editors of The Economist, Fortune 500 CEOs, and policy makers. Attendees will participate in a full day of stimulating interactive discussion and debate. Speakers include Reid Hoffman, the co-founder of LinkedIn, Stanley McChrystal, the former U.S. Army general. Save 15% off the current registration rate. You can use the promotional code WGN15, WGN15. That's the opening bell for today. Our producer is Mary Sandberg. Thanks to Ben Cortez, our engineer, production help from Ross Cochran and Kevin Powell. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget to join us again tomorrow. The opening bell bright and early at 5 a.m. here on WGN. Steve Cochran's up next. Stay with us.